Well, Jason, thank you very much. And may I add my own welcome to you. It's great to have you with us as we consider this question, this issue of deal or no deal, the pros and cons of following Jesus in and out. Now, obviously, that language is dominating our news headlines at the moment, but I promise you, no chat at all about Brexit this evening. Instead, the issue is following Jesus or not. And it turns out this language we're hearing all the time will be really useful as we consider what that means. Now, there are Christians in London. I guess you know that. You might be a Christian, and if you're here, you might know one. And there's probably more than people realise. But at the same time, the majority, I guess, in London are not, quite clearly. And for a large proportion of those, it would be unthinkable for them to become a Christian. And I guess others would say, well, I don't even know what it means to become a Christian. Well, it's worth saying, becoming a Christian is not something that happens automatically. It's a decision you have to make, if you like. It's a deal you have to close. And hence our question, deal or no deal? And many of us will be used to making deals, whether at work or in our daily lives. And you know the kind of issues and questions you might ask. Well, is this deal in my best interest? Who is offering me this deal? Can I trust them? Can they deliver on what they promise? What will be the outcome if I do and if I don't? Well, if the issue before us is following Jesus, it makes sense. We need to hear what he has to say, what he is offering. And so on your tables, you'll see copies of Luke's Gospel. Do grab one of those. This is the historical eyewitness account of the life and times of Jesus. And you'll know that in Jesus' day, he drew enormous crowds. But that doesn't mean they were all, well, committed, signed-up followers. You might say in today's terms, they were Twitter followers or Instagram followers. They were interested. They liked to see what he was doing, but not yet committed. And I think we can also imagine where a crowd draws a crowd. So there'd be plenty of people in that crowd who didn't really know anything about Jesus, but just, well, wanted to see what it was all about. Well, whatever it was, Jesus spoke to the crowds. And we are going to listen in to a few words that he said. And it's particularly where he sets out plainly the offer he makes of what it means to follow him. Laura has kindly agreed to come up and read those words for us.
So that's Luke chapter 9, verses 18 to 27. Now it happened that as he was praying alone, the disciples were with him. And he asked them, "Who do the crowd say that I am?" And they answered, "John the Baptist, but others say Elijah, and others that one of the prophets of old has risen." Then he said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" And Peter answered, "The Christ of God." And he strictly charged and commanded them to tell this to no one, saying, "The Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and on the third day be raised." And he said to all, "If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. For what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses or forfeits himself? For whoever is ashamed of me and of my words, of him will the Son of Man be ashamed when he comes in his glory and the glory of the Father and of the holy angels. But I tell you truly, there are some standing here who will not taste death until they see the kingdom of God."
Great, thank you, Laura. Well, we're just going to get straight down to business. What are the terms of the deal that Jesus is offering? And Jesus' opening gambit, if you like, is there in verse 23. He said to all, this large crowd, "If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me." Are you shocked by those words? Well, we're meant to be. You may have missed it, maybe because you're not sure what Jesus is saying, or some of us might be dulled by familiarity. He starts by saying, deny yourself. Now, you might know that in the annual church calendar, we are currently in the period of Lent, and people talk about denying themselves. But that normally means cutting down on the chocolate and the cakes, maybe a break from social media. But that's not what Jesus is talking about. This is far more radical than that. Let me ask, for any of us, what is it that drives our lives? And the answer is very simple. It's me. I drive my life. I'm in the driving seat. I want to do what I want. Yes, it looks different for each of us. There might be different constraints on us for all sorts of reasons. Bottom line, though, we all try and make the best of our lives as best we think we can. And that's normal. That's what everyone does all around us. Jesus says, deny self. That is, do you realize you can no longer drive your life, says Jesus. You can't decide which way to go, where to live, how to live the future. Instead, Jesus says, you've got to put your life in the hands of another. And he means him. Deny yourself. And just in case we hadn't grasped just how radical that is, look what Jesus says next. The follower must take up his cross daily. Now, again, that little phrase gets bandied about, but what does it mean? Well, remember, this is the first century. We're talking about the Roman Empire. Romans crucified people in their thousands. So in that day, it wouldn't be that unusual for you to see the condemned criminal carrying the crossbeam to the place of his execution. So just imagine you were on the roadside that day when that man passed by carrying his cross. And then you heard him speak, but what he was talking about was his hopes, his ambitions, his aspirations, the plans for next week, next month, next year, the next holiday, the hope for the career, the opportunity, what they wanted to achieve. But what would you think? Well, that's ridiculous. That man, his life was essentially over. And Jesus says, take up your cross daily. Forget your life lived your way. Deny yourself. Who you were before, with all that you used to live for, he says, instead, end of that verse, he says, follow me. And there you go. That is the deal Jesus offers. So let me ask, deal or no deal? And I know what we're thinking. Of course, no way. No thanks. That goes against everything that I live for. And I'm sure Jesus' original hearers would have been absolutely stunned to hear this. If you talk about pros and cons, well, this is all con, surely. It's missing out. You can imagine the crowd saying there must be more to it than this. Well, yes, which there is. So let's read on. Verse 24, Jesus says, for whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. So save life, save it. It sounds paradoxical, which I think is exactly what Jesus is trying to do. He wants to change the way that you and I think, to turn it upside down. Because the default position is trying to save life now in Jesus' language. That is, make the most of life as we have it. Make sure our bite of the cherry is a pretty big one. But Jesus says, live like that, again, which is normal. Well, you will lose everything. You will lose life. And Jesus' point is, forget him coming to you or not. You're all on that track, says Jesus, by default. That is how you are living. But listen to me, he says, about where it is heading. But there is an alternative. Again, verse 24, he says, whoever loses life for my sake will save it. So losing life for Jesus' sake, that's what we've just heard him talk about. Deny yourself, take up the cross. Jesus says, you do that, seemingly missing out on all you were hoping for, you will save life. That is, you will get life, the life you actually long for, the life as it was designed to be, life to the full. Life at its best. Well, can you imagine that crowd at this point? Very skeptical, I imagine, to say the least, even incredulous. who was this making this kind of offer? It was certainly, I guess, not why they were following Jesus around. This is not what they were bargaining for. Of course, Jesus knows what they're thinking. So look how he goes on in verse 25. What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses or forfeits himself? Well, the world is your oyster. And that's what we want, isn't it? We want the world, or at least as much of it as we can lay our hands on. Here we are in the city of London, profit and loss. Bottom line, it's all about how many zeros. Many will admit that. Life's all about money. I have friends like that. Many others might want to say, well, life's not all about money. We know that. And yet you look at them and it's obvious. Money drives them. Because there is this unstated assumption that we all pretty much buy into, that if you have money, then that is your best bet of the good life, the comfortable life, the easy life. And we don't really ever stop to think about it. Will that money deliver? And so Jesus asks this question here to challenge his hearers. What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses or forfeits himself? Now, I don't know many of you here. For all I know, you've begun to make it in life already. And you might make it really big. You might get the career. It might take off. You might be the next Jeff Bezos or whoever it is you are dreaming to be. Question Jesus says, but where will that get you, really? Now, we could debate how much money actually delivers, even in this life, really. But what is certain, of course, is you can't take it when you go. How much did that deceased leave? Everything. Every time. And notice here, Jesus, I think, is making an assumption that we would all agree with. That our lives, my life, is very valuable. My soul, as he describes it, that really matters, who I am. And in the end, Jesus agrees, that does matter more than all this world has to offer. But there's obviously a challenge in Jesus' question. If in our pursuit now of all that we chase after, well, what if that means we then miss out or lose on what matters most of all? Well, what is that? What is it that counts? Well, let's look on to verse 26. Jesus says, whoever is ashamed of me and my words, of him will the Son of Man be ashamed when he comes in his glory and the glory of the Father and of the holy angels. Well, I hope now with that sentence that an issue that I hope has been growing in your mind all through this now reaches a dramatic conclusion. And that is, who on earth does Jesus Christ think that he is? If you're not thinking that, well, it may be that you haven't really heard anything that Jesus has been saying. Did you hear what he said? He says, deny self, take up cross. Why do that? To follow him. He asks his followers to lose their lives. Why? For his sake. And now here in verse 26, well, the idea around today for some people that Jesus, oh, they like him. He's a wise man that can give a little spiritual advice on how to make the most of life. Well, that idea now is blown apart in verse 26. That doesn't make any sense of Jesus Christ. He calls him there the Son of Man. The Son of Man is an Old Testament title speaking of God's glorious, all-powerful king, a king who rules over every nation. And Jesus says, that's who I am. And with that notice, Jesus says, a day is coming when he will stand in glory. He'll be surrounded by the angels and God the Father. And with that, every person who's ever lived, including you and me, will stand before him. Let me just ask, maybe you're looking in on Christian things here, but you know a Christian. Did you realize that's what they believe about Jesus Christ? And there's even more that Jesus claims in that verse. Notice he tells his hearers that if they decide to reject what he's telling them, to reject him and his words, that is, be ashamed of them, then that will have consequences. Jesus says, on that day when all humanity stand before him, the Son of Man, in glory, those who are ashamed of Jesus now, he will be ashamed of them then. He will have nothing to do with them, and they will face the consequences. I don't know how we're feeling at this point. I can imagine the hearers that back then, on that day, would now feel very uncomfortable indeed. I mean, if they weren't, they either weren't paying attention or they weren't taking Jesus seriously. We've thought deal or no deal, in or out, follow Jesus or not. Well, Jesus has now raised the stakes far higher maybe than we thought he would, that we are comfortable with. What are we to make of this deal? I think this has raised two key questions that will help us think that through. The first one is, well, who is this Jesus? I wonder if you've seen Ricky Gervais's new Afterlife series. It's been advertised on the Tube. It's on Netflix. It's a comedy drama, but really it's another vehicle for Ricky Gervais to promote his atheistic manifesto, which you may be familiar with. In one episode, the Ricky Gervais character himself says, Jesus is a bleep. There's no need for me to repeat the expletive that he simply uses. And yes, those who follow Jesus will find that offensive. And yet I think we can say, after what we've heard Jesus say today, that conclusion is actually more consistent with the atheistic worldview than those who say, well, I deny the supernatural, but I think Jesus is a wise person that I respect. That just doesn't make any sense. Here, Jesus is plainly claiming to be God's king. He is claiming that he rules over each of us, whether we like it or not. It's not our choice. He is the king. And he says that our eternal destiny is determined by our response to him. Can I say, if Jesus is not who he claims to be, he is a lunatic or a wicked deceiver manipulating the gullible. He is a bleep. So who then is Jesus? That actually has been the identity in Luke's gospel up to this point. You'll see we've dived in chapter 9. At this point, the evidence has been building. Look back to verse 20 in our reading, where Jesus, now not the crowd, but his disciples, he asks them the question, but who do you say that I am? Now remember these disciples, they haven't been watching Jesus from afar. They've been living with him. They've heard his remarkable teaching. They've witnessed the miracles. You might know them. Jesus met a paralytic, said, get up. The man did. Jesus told a life-threatening storm to be still, and it was. Even Jesus told a dead girl to get up, and she did. And so Jesus asks them at this point the question, who do you say that I am? And look at Peter's answer, the Christ of God. And that is another title for this Son of Man, kingly figure. What has Peter done? He has used his rational faculties, come to the scientific, logical conclusion to which all the evidence that he has seen points to. Jesus must be who he claims to be, the Christ, God's glorious King. And of course, that same evidence is accessible to us. Luke has written it down, the eyewitness accounts. So if we are wondering who is Jesus, well, read this and ask, what is the identity of this man? Can he really be who he claims to be? We see that question matters. Because if Jesus could possibly be what he claims, we need to listen. And then I think the second question that we need to resolve as we consider this claim, deal or no deal, is, well, what is this life Jesus talks about? I know my life that I want to keep hold of and hang on to, but what's the life that Jesus offers? And we haven't really got time to answer that. We need to read on in Luke and see what we find. But we are given a pointer, even in our passage, to what it's all about. Look at verse 22. Isaiah 22. The Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed, and on the third day be raised. Now that is baffling. If Jesus really is the Son of Man, the Christ, the glorious King, why would he have to suffer and die being rejected in humiliation and shame? And getting to the bottom of that question is what we need to understand Jesus, but also what is this life that he brings? That's why he came, to die, so that we might have it. Just a pointer, you don't need to turn to it, but right at the end of Luke's gospel, you'll know Jesus died, a criminal was hanging on the cross next to him, and cried out to Jesus, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." It's utterly remarkable. Jesus would have been battered and bruised and bloodied, but that criminal says, "That's the King." And the criminal thinks that that Jesus can deliver beyond death. Now, we might read that and think, yeah, okay, that's just wishful, deluded, end-of-life dreaming thinking. But Jesus responds with these words. He says, "Truly, I say to you, today you'll be with me in paradise." Again, an astounding claim for Jesus to make. His resurrection from the dead proves he can deliver. That's the life that he can give. So there we are, following Jesus. Deal or no deal? In or out? Pros or cons? Well, we've seen some words of Jesus himself from Luke chapter 9. We've seen the issues. How will we respond? Do we recognize Jesus as the King he claims to be? Do we trust that he can deliver on what he promises?
We've got a couple of questions in here, and we do hope that you'll carry on those conversations that you've been having around your table afterwards. And I think the questions show that you're thinking about some of the things that Aaron's been saying. So I'm going to fire them over to Aaron, and we'll see where we go from there. Some of them are similar, so I'll kind of ask them together as we go through. So, Aaron, someone asked, what does it look like to, in today's world, to give up everything? And what does it look like to lose life now? And what does it look like to give up everything? Some examples.
I mean, it's good to ask, what does this look like in practice? Especially if that's got under our skin and we are taking Jesus seriously. What would that mean? What would that look like? I mean, the danger of doing that is we want very specific answers, that that's what it would look like to me. I mean, it does follow from the principle. Jesus is saying, all those things that life is about now, that we live for, that we put our hope in, that we think that's what's going to give me satisfaction, I realize it won't do that. So to live for those things now would be foolish for anyone. And so to deny that is to mean that's not going to be the thing that I will do above all else, whether it's the relationship or the career or the fun or whatever it is, or other things. I no longer think that's what life's about, because I found something else. Now, Jesus is, in using this language, trying to shock us. It's not all about denial. In fact, I think the message of Jesus, he wants you to read on to find out what he means. It's a positive message, because in the end, if you still think that house you might live in, the relationship you might have, the family you might get, the possessions you might have, if you still think those are the best things, you won't be able to deny them, because there'll be nothing else to take their place. Jesus is saying that he is so valuable that he can tell you, to bring you to your senses, stop staring at that other stuff, stop living for all that stuff, because I give you myself. And what I offer you is far more. And that's the heart of it. And then all sorts of things will follow. And again, we then change our whole thinking and the whole world. So the reason we can't be prescriptive is every good thing in this world was given to us by God through Jesus. So Jesus wants us to enjoy good things, and so we will, and we'll thank him. That's the wonder of being a Christian, actually. You can enjoy good things and thank someone because they've given it to you, and all these things. So you'll work all that out. But over it all, you will now have a new top priority, which is Jesus. And also, he is flagging up that wanting to live for him will mean losing out in worldly terms. Because it'll mean, well, he says particularly ashamed of him and his words. Our world doesn't like Jesus' words. Jesus says, if we so value him, we think what he says is very precious, very valuable, I will stand up for his words, when that will cost you then the other things you wanted to keep hold of. So it means you lose maybe a friendship, or a relationship or career progression, because you want people to hear Jesus' words. And in fact, you so want people to hear Jesus' words, you might say, it doesn't matter if I'm saying it, I want others who may be really good at saying it to do it. So you'll give money because you'll want others to hear about Jesus. Whereas in the past, you would never even dream of doing that when you could instead go on holiday. But your whole way of thinking has changed, which will lead to what looks like denial. And it will be costly, but because you found something more valuable.
Well, I think that leads into the kind of the next question. A few people starting to count the cost and realizing that. Does that mean self-denial means you can't have ambitions or plans? Is it wrong for Christians to be rich? Can they have these ambitions in the world? And so maybe you're kind of thinking, is it worth it?
So again, the question of ambition is really important, and plans and what you want for your life. Jesus, again, you may have ambitions and plans for career, for family, for all these things, for possessions, which in some sense may not be bad in and of themselves. And just to throw them away, and it may not make any sense. But the question is, Jesus is claiming by this very strong language, he gives you a better ambition, something that will displace those things. And you might think, well, I can't imagine what that would be. And Jesus again is saying, it's me. Jesus is saying, make your ambition to know me better, to live to please me. That is, again, what you were made for. Again, from the outside, you think, that sounds awful. But you get to know Jesus and you think, that makes sense of life. Mm. I want to live to please him, to honour him, to make him known. And if as part of that, I'm still a lawyer or a doctor or a teacher or a nurse or whatever it is, there may well be a way of doing that. But that's no longer the driving force. And it may mean, and it does for some, that an ambition may be long held. You actually say, well, actually, I could serve Jesus and know him better this way. And others will think you are crazy. And you might think that for a moment as well. But that's why you'll do it, because you've found a new ambition that you want to live for.
Brilliant. So new ambition, are there other pros of following Jesus in this life?
So this is where the language of deal or no deal can sometimes break down, because people look into Jesus but still think of it through the grid of life as it is now. And this is what lots of people do. They look into Christian things, like into spirituality. Will a little bit of Jesus help me with my other aims in life? Will it give me a bit more balance? All that kind of stuff. Will it help me, give me, you know, clear thinking, that kind of thing? But that's completely the wrong way to think about it. What are the pros of following Jesus? The pro is Jesus. That is it. And if at the moment you think, well, that's nothing, well, that, I would say, shows you have no idea of who Jesus is and what he offers. The pro is you and I can get to know Jesus now. Listen to Jesus more. We don't deserve that, quite the opposite. We deserve him to be ashamed of us and to suffer the consequences. But Jesus is saying, you can know me and live all of life in relationship with him. That is the pro. Wonderfully, then in all of life, you will find all sorts of other pros follow, because Jesus gives them. Because when the heart of everything is sorted, I'm in relationship with my creator, with Jesus, well, I will actually enjoy life more. I will have relationships with others who are like this. And later on in Luke's gospel, chapter 18, Jesus says, actually, even with the worldly way of thinking, there is far more he will give you that you will enjoy with them. Difficulties and persecutions. But at the heart of it is knowing Jesus. So let me just say, if what I've just said makes no sense to you, that's not a pro, please look more into Jesus. Why would I say that? Why would your Christian friend say that? What is it about knowing Jesus now and forever that makes that the pro?
Brilliant. This is someone who's clearly been around on a Sunday and been thinking about the challenging teaching we've been hearing there and the challenging teaching we're hearing. Try and put the two together. How do we as Christians reconcile denying ourselves, but then also letting Jesus take control and being at liberty in Christ, having that freedom?
So Christians speak of being free wonderfully in a way that we could never be before. And so the language you've heard today sounds from Jesus quite constraining. The wonder is, what is the freedom that Jesus gives? What is it for? And the freedom is actually to be with him. That thief on the cross, do you remember what Jesus said to him? today you will be with me in paradise. You might hear that and think the best bit is the paradise. Well, not really. The best bit is with Jesus. Paradise, you get everything else thrown in. It's going to be amazing. But the point is you'll be with me, with Jesus. Paradise wouldn't be paradise without Jesus, for someone who knows Jesus. It's to be with him. And we are free to know him and to serve him. That's the key point. So actually, to live our life following Jesus, although in this world it does feel hard and it is costly, that is freedom. Because without Jesus, we are slaves. I mean, use the language of sin. We are slaves to ourselves. That's the kind of language Jesus uses here, and I use it. And that is heading to judgment, and there is nothing we can do to escape it. We are slaves to that. And yet Jesus says, I will free you from that judgment. That's why he dies, to die the death we deserve. And we are freed to know him. Now, if you know Christians, we find it hard to live Jesus' way. And at the same time, we will tell you, living Jesus' way is the best way. And Jesus helps me, gives me the freedom to do that, which without him, I wouldn't have. That is a great freedom to live Jesus' way.
Brilliant. What if a Christian's life doesn't look different? What would you say to them?
So it sounds like that means if someone becomes to know Jesus and their life...
No change.
If you read Luke's gospel, the rest of the Bible, that just wouldn't make any sense at all. Because in all sorts of ways. Without Jesus, we are enslaved to sin, to living the way we shouldn't, to thinking the way we shouldn't. We are enslaved to pursuing our own ambitions. Without Jesus, realizing how wonderful he is, we will never be speaking of him. It certainly won't be the driving aim of our life to make the good news about him known to others. So if those things, there's no change at all. I still live for myself. I still fail in all the ways I did before. Not claiming anyone's going to be perfect. I still never have any desire to speak of Jesus. I don't organize my life around him. Well, that simply shows, doesn't it, that I obviously don't know Jesus. So it doesn't make any sense. Now, I want to say this for the Christians here and for others. We all, even when we've come to know Christ, fail and we sin. We don't do those things perfectly by a long way. Wonderfully, Jesus forgives us, which is part of the wonder of knowing Jesus. But I think there will be a change because there'll be this change of direction. I was going my way. I've turned to go Jesus' way, and that must show itself in various ways.
Brilliant. This is the last one for now, yep. And we'll have some time around the tables, but how can I be convinced that this life is worth losing for Jesus?
It's a good question to ask, isn't it? That's what Jesus wants us to do in Luke chapter 9, to weigh up this challenge he gives, deal or no deal. And as I've mentioned briefly, the thing is to investigate further, and the focus of your investigation is Jesus. Is he worth following? Because in the end, that's what's on offer. I mean, there's loads of other stuff thrown in, wonderfully, because it comes from the generous giver, which is Jesus. But he is the heart of it. Is this someone I want to know and be with for all eternity? That is what's on offer. Jesus is offering himself. Let me just turn to a summary verse, which I'll encourage you to try and work out what this means, because that'll get you to the heart of it. So in your Luke's gospel, turn to chapter 19. So Jesus has been traveling all the way to Jerusalem from chapter 9, that bit we said before, and he's kept on going along the way. And on the way, he's been explaining what his kingdom is like, why you might want to follow. In chapter 19, a famous incident with a man called Zacchaeus. He welcomes Zacchaeus into his family. And then look down page 62, verse 10. Now, we now know who the Son of Man is, this great king, Jesus himself. Verse 10, he says, the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. As you read Luke's gospel, Jesus tells us what we are like by nature in our hearts, the way we've treated our Creator, that we are lost. And that there's no way back. We are enslaved. We are trapped. And then Jesus, what we deserved was his judgment, but instead he came into the world. And he came on, if you like, a search and rescue mission. He came looking for us, to seek us. But that was not all it took. He then had to save us, to rescue us, to get us out of the mess we were in. Because of the way we treated God, we deserved judgment, God's punishment. And Jesus was going to the cross because he was saying, well, that's the only way he could save us. And he was willing to do that, to endure the most extreme agony for our sakes. And you begin to realize this is someone I would love to know for all eternity. And he has done everything necessary to make it possible. He came to seek and to save the lost. He did that for me. And so you realize this is a Jesus that is worth following.